The original preface to Samuel Rutherford's letters, 1664 through 1783, with Mr. Rutherford's testimony to the covenanted work of Reformation from 1638 to 1649 in Britain and Ireland, Robert McWard. Joshua Redivivus, or 352 Religious Letters by the late eminently pious Mr. Samuel Rutherford, Professor of Divinity at St. Andrews, divided into three parts, the first containing those which were written from Aberdeen, where he was confined by a sentence of the High Commission drawn forth against him, partly upon the account of declining them, partly upon the account of his nonconformity. Second and third, containing some which were written from Anwath, before he was by the prelates of persecution thrust out of his ministry, and others upon divers occasions afterward from St. Andrews, London, etc. To which is added the author's testimony to the covenanted work of Reformation between 1638 and 1649, and also his dying words, containing several advices to some ministers and near relations, not in any of the former editions. As also a large preface and a postscript, which were left out in some of the late editions, wrote by the Reverend Mr. McWard. The 10th edition, Glasgow, printed by John Bryce and sold at his shop opposite Gibson's Wind, Salt Market, 1783. Advertisement. The editor of this present edition of the Reverend Mr. Rutherford's letters does not propose to entertain the reader with any encomiums upon the worthy author, whose praise is already in the churches, or any commendation of his unparalleled letters, which have already been so well relished by the religious part of mankind. All that is intended is only to point out the superior excellence of this edition to any of the former ones. It will appear obvious to everyone, upon the smallest attention and reflection, that most of the former impressions of this part of our author's performances have been printed both upon a very small type and an extreme coarse paper, which made the perusing of them, though excellent in themselves, very unpleasant to the reader, and often marred that edification that might otherwise have arisen from them. To remedy which was the design of the editor in offering the following edition of Mr. Rutherford's letters to the public, an edition which he hopes, from the largeness of the type, goodness of the paper, and elegancy of print, will do justice to the author, be a credit to himself, and at the same time yield pleasure and satisfaction to the reader. Most of the late editions of these letters have been considerably curtailed in lopping off a large preface from the beginning of them, tending to cast light upon the book and the transactions of those times, and also some of the late impressions have left out the postscript, usually subjoined to the end of them, both supposed to be wrote by the Reverend Mr. McWard. As the suppressing of these was complained of by the public, they are both retained in this impression, and to render this edition still more acceptable to the public, the publisher has added Mr. Rutherford's testimony to the covenanted work of Reformation between 1638 and 1649, and also his dying words, containing several advices to some ministers and near relations. that nothing might be wanting that has a tendency to reflect on or upon the justly esteemed author. To gratify the candid reader, the editor begs leave to conclude with subjoining the account and character given of him by the late Reverend Mr. Robert Woodrow, author of the History of the Sufferings of the Church of Scotland. That bright and shining light of his time, Mr. Samuel Rutherford, may justly come in among the sufferers during this session of Parliament, viz. In the year 1661. To be sure, he was a martyr, both in his own resolution and in men's designs and determination. He is so well known to the learned and pious world that I need say little of him. Such who knew him best were in a strait whether to admire him for his sublime genius in the school and peculiar exactness in matter of dispute and controversy, or his familiar condescensions in the pulpit, where he was one of the most moving and affectionate preachers in his time, or perhaps in any age of the church. But he seems to have outdone himself as well as everybody else in his admirable and every way singular letters, which, though jested upon by profane wits because of some familiar expressions, yet will be owned by all who have any relish of piety to contain such sublime flights of devotion and to be fraughted with such massy thoughts as loudly speak a soul united to Jesus Christ in the closest embraces, and must needs at once ravish and edify every serious reader. The Parliament were to have had an indictment laid before them against this holy man, if his death had not prevented it. After his book, entitled Lex Rex, had been ordered to be burnt at the cross of Edinburgh and the gate of the new College of St. Andrews, where he was divinity professor, in their great humanity, they were pleased when everybody knew Mr. Rutherford to be in a dying condition to cause sight him to appear before them at Edinburgh to answer a charge of high treason. But he had a higher tribunal to appear before, where his judge was his friend. Mr. Rutherford died in March 1661, the very day before the Act Recessory was passed in the Parliament. This eminent saint and faithful servant of Jesus Christ lamented, when near his end, that he was withheld from bearing a witness to the work of reformation since the year 1638, and giving his public testimony against the evil courses of the present time. Otherwise, he was full of peace and joy in believing. I have a copy before me of what could be gathered up of his dying words, and the expressions this great man had during his sickness. The Preface to the Christian Reader. I intended at first to have given thee the trouble of a larger preface to these epistles, but I perceived upon second thoughts that as thou shouldst be at a loss in being thereby kept up too long at the entry, so I should gain but little at following my first look, and therefore I have on purpose forborne what I intended, wherein, as I have pleased myself no worse, so I am sure I have pleased thee much better than if I had followed forth a design whereby thou couldst have reaped so little advantage. And therefore, leaving and laying it aside, I shall confine myself to what doth more peculiarly relate to this great little book. In the entry, give me leave to tell thee that as there are many of the author's papers, both polemic and practical, which he intended for public use and advantage, that will never see the light, because, being like Apelles' picture, which was either to be perfected by his own pencil or wholly laid aside, he carried his pen away with himself, leaving few in the generation that would undertake to follow his notion and finish it, or if they should essay it, it would be in the issue Humano Capiti Servidum Jungeri Equinam, upon which account the Church of God may lament the loss of such a master in Israel. As the world, I say, is at no small loss by being robbed of so rich a treasure which was intended for them, so these few, which the author did not at all intend for public use, are here sent abroad. He did violence to the desires of many in refusing to publish them, albeit he was known to consult the satisfaction and advantage of the truly godly more than his own contentment or ease, not because he thought them unworthy of a scholar, as not being stuffed with a great many sterile notions. If any allege this, 'tis non causa pro causa. But the true reason why he endeavored to suppress and conceal them from the world was lest any man should think of him above what was meet, because, if not of the abundance of revelation, which yet God did indeed give his suffering servant, as will be clear by comparing what he foresaw, both as to the work in general and as to some particular persons with the event. Yet, of the abundance of soul-refreshing manifestations that he had, this is the true reason which made him inexorable and kept him from listening to the most pressing and assiduous entreaties of his friends. He had many things which commended him to the people of God. But his covering, his great attainments as a Christian, and the pregnancy of his parts as a scholar, with the veil of humility, which is the chief ornament of a gracious spirit, as it did render him peculiarly and deservedly dear to them, so it made both the one and the other shine more brightly, and did besides their native and intrinsic beauty give an adventitious brightness and luster to all that great stock of grace and store of parts, which were found rara avis in terris jointly in him. It was manifest to all who were but a little acquaint with him that his modesty and humility was such that in all his most eminent appearances for God he studied to disappear, lest he should, by standing up, be guilty of intercepting any part of that glory which belongs to him alone, of whom are all things and for whom are all things. Neither was he at any loss hereby, for thus he became great in the kingdom of God, his growing downward in that high and gospel-adorning grace of humility made him grow upward in favor with God and all good men. And thus, by denying himself and seeking God alone, he both found what he sought and got what he was not willing to take, nor would own as his due. But besides this true account I have given, why the world was deprived of so useful and edifying a piece to this day, I think it should not pass without a remark that God in his good providence hath reserved the publication thereof for such a time as this, wherein it seems to promise a singular advantage beyond and above what was probably attainable at any other season. First, as the suffering people of God, who while they are deprived of these things in public, for the most part, which comforted them over all their sorrows, and while the songs of the sanctuary, because the Philistines have stopped most of those wells out of which they used to draw and drink with joy, that which was sweeter to the taste than honey to the mouth, or they have thrown that into them, which hath not only made them lose their former relish and sweetness, but hath rendered them so bitter that they are now become gall and wormwood, are turned into howling and bitter lamentation. While it is thus, I say, with the people of God, that instead of being made glad in his house of prayer as formerly, they are sighing for the ceasing of those solemn assemblies. They may in their sad hours commune with this sufferer, who not being willing to eat his morsel alone, speaks to them good words, and comfortably telleth you, beloved sufferers, what a heaven is to be had in Christ's company. Even when ye are put to bear the cross, and to have shame and suffering for his sake, as your inseparable companion. Neither is his discourse upon this subject an empty or idle speculation. Nay, he speaks what he knoweth. The God for whose cause he suffered comforted him in the like tribulation. And so he is in case to comfort you by the comforts wherewith he himself was comforted of God. Next, as to those of the ministers of the gospel, who by the violence of their adversaries are driven from their flocks, which, to a godly minister, is the greatest of afflictions, such, I say, may see for strengthening of their hands, while they are put to contend with those that are too strong for them. How this noble witness, who suffered for the same cause, carried, how he acquitted himself and overcame. The archers shot sore at him, but his bow abode in its strength. The arms of his hands were made so strong by the hand of the mighty God of Jacob that he was too hard for all that entered the lists with him. And when they thought they had done sufficient, either to force him to a compliance, or to make him faint under the effects of their fury, by depriving him of his ministry, which was dearer to him than his life, he was not by all this so much put to suffering, to speak properly, as he was for a season a little removed from the noise and distraction that is abroad in the world, to be alone with God. Oh, blessed solitude! Oh, sweet society! He was taken out of the clamor and confusion that is here below, up to the mount, where he was admitted to a near familiarity, and experienced the sweetness of that fellowship with God, which he had preached to others. Though he was not taken from the earth, yet he was not only kept from the evil that was then and is now in the world, but he enjoyed such a heaven under his heavy pressures, that if he, being about his master's business, had not been prized by him as preferable to his own consolation, he would have been in hazard of forgetting the troubles of Zion, and so saying, "It is good for me to be here." But he was such a servant as made it his meat and drink to do his master's will. He had so learned Christ as to prefer his concernments to his chief joy, and therefore ye will find him often in these epistles, feasting upon the consolations of God with the tear in his eye, while he remembers Zion and calls to mind the desolate condition of the flocks of Christ, particularly his own, for whom nothing was prepared. He found in his solitude such a measure of presence as could hardly have been expected out of the chamber of presence, where there is fullness of joy and pleasures forevermore. He knew more in his happy retirement of the exercise of them who are above, who being made kings unto God have crowns upon their heads, and being made priests also sacrifice these to the giver, than he could have learned by revolving all the volumes that are written in many ages amidst the greatest outward calm and tranquility. This is the summer fruit which grew out of the hard tree of the cross of Christ that he was put to bear, which was so sweet to his taste that it made him disdain the dainties of his adversaries and disrelish these sour and unsavory delights of the sons of men, which, however they may at first seem to have some petty sweet in them, yet they quickly set the teeth of the eater on edge and are found bitter in the belly and of a bad digestion. These were the quiet fruits of righteousness that his servant reaped by his sufferings for Christ, and that in such plenty that out of his abundance he sends some baskets of these sweet fruits abroad amongst his friends, both to bring up a good report upon his liberal Lord and Master, who allows on his followers, while they are pinched with penury of other comforts, full measure, heaped up, running over, and shaken together. And upon the cross of Christ also, to the end it might appear, that this burden is so far from embittering the life of a suffering saint, that by the contrary, as the sufferings of Christ abounded in him, so his consolation also abounded by Jesus Christ. The publications, then, I say, of these epistles seems in Providence to be trysted on purpose with the sufferings of his servants at this time, that we may be encouraged by his example to a zealous faithfulness and a cheerful suffering, and may wax bold by his bonds, under and in which he did experience much of the glorious liberty of the sons of God. How oft do we find him preferring his confinement to all the sublunary contentments of his persecutors? Here did he feed upon these pure and unmixed delights, which put such a gladness in the heart as expels all the latent and lurking griefs that are there, and causeth the soul, while surrounded with all outward trouble, to sing, while they feed upon ashes, and fill their belly with the east wind, who feast upon the tears of the people of God, and seem to have nothing else to interrupt their tranquility but how they may trouble the children of peace. It was under this restraint and in this house of his bondage, when being shut up from and spoiled of all creature comforts, that he found the surpassing sweetness of the consolations of God, which taste best when they are most free of the mud and mixture of other enjoyments. There it was where he found the truth of that saying of Augustine: "If one drop of heavenly joy should fall into hell, it would swallow up or sweeten all the bitterness of that place of torment." The love of God and the joy of the Holy Ghost was so abundantly shed abroad in his heart while he was in the furnace, that his cross was not only made thereby light and easy, and his life pleasant, but ye have him often saying, because he found by these foretastes what inconceivable consolation must be in the immediate vision and full fruition of God, that if there were no other way to come at the possession of that blessedness, he would not only choose to swim through a sea of outward troubles, but he would wade through the lake of fire and brimstone to be possessed of God himself. And there is none who knew the sobriety of this holy man that will judge he complimented in saying so. Nay, there are none who have found what a cool, refreshing shade and abundant consolation the soul finds in the company of the Son of Man while they walk with him amidst the flames of the most scorching fiery trials. But they would think strange if he spake otherwise. Let us then be ashamed to fear at the cross or at Christ's company because of it, since it bears the man who bears it. Let us resolve to take joyfully the loss of all things, life itself not being accepted, in the service of such a master who makes us gainers by our losses, and then in a special way makes up all our wants according to his riches in glory, when we have forsaken all to follow him. Let us study to carry in the fight of adversaries as men who cannot be made miserable by affliction. For if we be but indeed faithful to him, we are more happy at our worst than we know. Or rather, we are in so far miserable as we know not how happy we are. He who is admitted to know that he hath a place in the heart of God needs but care little what he meet with from the hand of man. This may wipe all tears from his eyes, even while he sighs out that sad word, "I am poor and needy," that he knoweth, and in case to add that other, "Yet the Lord thinketh upon me, and doth earnestly remember me still." And by the way, though it is neither far out of my way nor thine, nor eccentric to my present purpose, let me say that if the question were moved, how it cometh to pass that he found so much and other worthy sufferers also before him, that these things seem almost dreams and incredible to us. Truly, without speaking of anything of the absolute sovereignty of God, who may do with his own what he will, and dispense as he pleaseth, both as to measure and to time, the reason may seem to be very obvious. His and their witness bearing for Jesus Christ did every way and in all respects exceed ours. They gave to God as kings, though it was of his own they served him, their testimonies against the corruptions of their times, whether in king or parliament or churchmen, had so much of ministerial faithfulness, so much of freedom, so much of grave and gospel-becoming boldness in them, so much holy zeal, even for the least of the concernments of the kingdom of Christ, upon which we are loath to state our sufferings, or for the keeping whereof we are unwilling to hazard the loss of anything, that it was apparent they loved him so well that they loved not their lives unto the death. And that Christ could require nothing of them as a signification of their zeal for his interests, which they were not at a point to part with, and were not ready to give away, and he, upon the other hand, to make it appear that they could not serve the Lord for nothing, and to evidence his special complacency in such a zealous frame of spirit, did not only extraordinarily support them under their trouble, so that they did not sink, even when they seemed to others to be pressed out of measure and beyond strength, but did manifest himself in a most familiar manner unto them, so when they were almost at this, that they had not whereupon to lay their head, they had then free access to lean it and lay it on his bosom. In a word, God did declare that he thought nothing too great nor too good for them who gave themselves away so entirely to him. So that if the question were asked at God, whence is it that there is so vast a difference betwixt his dealing with the former witnesses and those who now give some kind of testimony to his name, he could quickly silence and put to shame the movers of that question by sending us back to see what a difference there is betwixt what those worthies did and suffered for him and what we have done, though under more obligations, at least subjective, under more oaths, covenants, engagements, protestations, and these often reiterate, than many of them were. He met them as men who rejoiced and wrought righteousness and could neither be flattered nor frowned out of their fidelity and freedom. And he hides himself from us, as it were, ashamed of such witnesses whose very testimony is so unworthy of such a master and so far short of what it ought to be, as if indeed we were ashamed of him and his truth, or thought the torn and the lame a sufficient sacrifice for him. It was not the main question of these men in a suffering time how much they might let go and yet keep the substantials of religion, or how long they should be silent out of fear, lest if they endeavored to acquit themselves faithfully, they should both be reputed rash and imprudent, and provoke the magistrate by venting their needless jealousies to do what he intended not. They did not think it enough to give some oblique intimation of their dislike or half signification of their detestation of these courses whereby they conceived their master's interest wronged, his prerogative encroached upon, and the whole endangered. Nay, these men of God, who knew the times and what Israel had to do, thought such a carriage unworthy of the ambassadors of Christ, who are set for the defense of the gospel and upon the matter, but as the couching of asses under the burden. They would sooner have parted with their lives than with one hoof of what belonged to their master. They thought it more worthy of a watchman to put all on their guard upon the least appearance of the approach of an enemy than suffer themselves to be shamefully surprised in their security. And they thought it more like the good soldiers of Jesus Christ to cover the ground where they stood with their dead bodies than as afraid or terrified by their adversaries in anything to make a dishonorable retreat. He who would have put them from witnessing a good confession when the danger of the work of God called them to cry aloud and not to spare behooved not only to have threatened them, for that would not have done their business, they being men of such mettle as could have looked death out of countenance in its most formidable shape and carried in the face of all opposition as those whom no affliction could make miserable. But to silence them perfectly, he behooved to have sent them into the other world, which could not be terrible to them who had the certain expectation that if so dismissed, they should take up their place amongst the souls under the altar, slain for the word of God and their testimony that they held. And I may say particularly to the commendation of the grace of God in this his faithful servant, who having served his generation according to the will of God is now fallen asleep, that to the observation of all he never was afraid of the face of man in appearing for the interests of Christ, neither knew he what it was to be silent when he saw these in hazard. Nay, He was such a son of Levi as knew neither friend nor brother in the matters of God. Which blessed disposition did accompany him to his grave. For though such was the indulgence of his master to so faithful a servant, that he would have him to die in peace, though he denied him not the honor of a martyr, dying under the sentence of confinement in his own house, plucking him out of the jaws of a bloody death, wherewith he was threatened, and which was intended for him by those whose indignation had almost come to that height, as to say upon the matter, "Bring him hither upon the bed, that we may kill him." For not being satisfied with the testimony of the physicians, nor the magistrates, or the ministers of the place, certifying that he was not able to travel to Edinburgh, as by the sequel was too sadly confirmed, he was confined to his own house when he was not able to go abroad, and put to shame in that place where he had deservedly gained the repute of one of the most learned and successful laborious doctors that ever had filled that chair, and one of the most faithful and diligent ministers that ever watched over or labored amongst a people. Ah, Scotland, Scotland, whither hast thou caused thy shame to go? If it had been an enemy who had sought to deal thus with thy seers and faithful prophets, it had become thee better to have hid these by fifties in caves from the fury of their enemies. Or if thou couldst not have preserved the lives of such worthies, either to have died with them, or to have made it appear that thou only lived to lament the loss of a greater treasure than if thou hadst lost all the gold of India and Ophir. But for thy own sword to devour thy own prophets, and that under the color of law, what canst thou say for this that will satisfy? What apology canst thou make to God for misusing his prophets and shedding the blood of the just in the midst of thee? What canst thou say for satisfying the nations who have heard of the renown of these men, these precious sons of Zion, comparable to fine gold, who have been dashed in pieces in the midst of thee and dealt with as earthen pitchers, the work of the hands of the potter? Wilt thou not be speechless, and not have wherewith to answer him that reproveth and reproacheth thee? Canst thou look forward, and not blush to think what succeeding generations will say of thee? What wilt thou say when it shall be asked by one whom thou must answer, what manner of men were these whose blood thou didst shed? However thou hast represented them now as malefactors, that thou mightest deal so with them, yet then thou must say, all of them were as the sons of kings. Ah, Scotland, Scotland, the most solemnly engaged to God, and the most guilty and ungrate of all the nations under the heavens, dost thou not fear after all this the cry of the souls under the altar, saying with a loud voice, "How long, O Lord, holy and true, dost thou not judge and avenge our blood on them that dwell on the earth?" Thou wast once made use of as a carpenter to fray the horns of them that did push the inheritance of the Lord. But now the spirit of the horns hath entered into the carpenters. And dost thou think thyself secure after all this? It is true, there is no visible power or party upon earth of whom thou hast much reason to be afraid. But remember that he who is higher than the highest regardeth, who will make inquisition for the blood of his saints, which thou hast shed, and his interests. And if thou wilt fear nothing else, Let me recommend the Scythian fear unto thee, of whom it is reported that they fear nothing but that the heavens should fall upon them. Alas! If thy enemy be above thee, how wilt thou guard thy head or secure thy heart when he gives the blow and recompenses thy way upon thine own head? And if thou wilt still go on, and instead of smiting on thy thigh and saying, "What have I done?" harden thyself and think to prosper, I shall desire grace to have such a frame of soul as to weep for thee in secret. But to return to my purpose from which this sad meditation hath a little withdrawn me, though such, I say, was the tenderness of his master to his servant, yet when he had nothing else to complain of, being for many days together before his death, filled with as much joy of the Holy Ghost as he could hold, he went away regretting this, though with a sweet submission to his master's will, that he died not in that bed of honor, and was not brought forth to breathe out his life and last upon a scaffold, since his master was dealing such favors amongst his followers, for to some, and blessed be he eternally, who carried them honorably through, it was given not only to believe, but also to suffer, and to the convictions of their enemies, as men who seemed rather to triumph over that king of terrors than to be daunted by its dreadful aspect. And since he was taking such proofs of the fidelity and affection of some of his followers, it will not be amiss for this purpose to insert his own words, which were taken from his mouth not once, but often reiterate. "Now," said that faithful servant, even when he was upon the threshold of glory, ready to receive the immortal crown, "my tabernacle is weak, and I would think it a more glorious way of going hence to lay down my life for the cause at the cross of Edinburgh or St. Andrews, but I submit to my master's will." Is it any wonder then, I say, since his and those other men's way in witnessing for God was so unlike ours, and so far beyond what is to be found in our faint appearances for him, as the one keeps no proportion with the other, that there should be so remarkable a difference betwixt his bearing witness to and testifying his complacency in what they did and what we do? If there be for the most part some proportion betwixt the dispensation of God and the disposition of men, what wonder that he who admitted them to the nearest familiarity with himself deal thus with us, and so let us know our breach of promise? Nay, if there be anything strange and to be wondered at in this, it is rather that he hath not been more terrible to us by writing his displeasure against our lukewarmness in greater characters than that we have not been more indulgently dealt with. It is exceedingly of all our concernments to lay this to heart and seriously to consider whether this be not the very thing that makes him keep at a distance from us. I suppose upon a very overly search and survey of our way, it will be found that by our unworthy carriage in his matters, we have rewarded this evil to our own souls. Our suffering, if it deserves that name, is with less edification and advantage to the church, and less comfort to our own souls, because if our testimony be weighed in the balance of the sanctuary, it will be found a light and to want many pounds, not only of what it ought to have, but of what theirs had, whose work was found perfect before God. But if we be really desirous to be dealt with as they were, and what is so desirable next to heaven and the coming of the kingdom of the Son of God upon the earth, let us endeavor to carry as they did. Were they not men of the like passions and infirmities with us? Why then should not we aim to be men of the like faithfulness and zeal with them? Then is it that we may hope to have sweet and halcyon days in his service, such as will make us the envy of our enemies, a comfort to our friends, and an ornament to our profession. Hereby shall a good report be brought up upon the ways of God, and we shall be living witnesses that godliness with all disadvantages, and when accompanied with the fiery trial, is great gain, and hath its hundredfold in this life, even with persecution. Let us study to be like them in going about our Master's work, and then we have rational ground to hope that he who showed by his dealing with the cloud of witnesses that went before us and do still compass us about and call to follow on, that he who was not unrighteous to forget their zeal in doing, their patience in suffering, their work and labor of love, will also remember us with the favor that he bore to these who went before us. Then may we expect that he will say to our souls in secret, when we have faith to acquit ourselves for him in public, "Go your way now, and eat your bread, though it be brown, with joy, and drink your drink, though it be not wine, with a merry heart. For I have accepted your works, and these are come up in remembrance with me." Oh, but one of these hours which Mr. Rutherford had in God's company were worth many years suffering and sweating in the heat of the day. I know the prelates and their party will think themselves at a loss to hear of it or have it said that God did admit to such familiarity with himself his faithful witness against the wickedness of their way. I grant indeed it is a special prejudice to them, for though it be strange, yet they who persecute his favorites and followers would even be thought to do God good service. But lest I should seem to say that there was some singularity in God's dealing with him, which I know would grate the ear of some of them who pretended to be chief amongst the rest, that had a particular spleen against this eminent servant of Jesus Christ, I need not trouble the world in telling them who he is, that being no secret, though I know not whether he would blush to have it said. He hated and persecuted a man so greatly beloved of God and dear to all his people, or if he would not rather boast of it. I owe him the charity that the latter of the two will be his choice, and that for fear of being charmed he will stop his ear from hearing that, "Why persecutest thou me?" and will essay to justify himself and satisfy others by saying, according to his accustomed candor and conscience, that he was a ringleader amongst the fanatics. It will sound harsh also, I know, in the ears of them who, in joining with him, have served themselves heirs to these who went before them in persecuting him, and such faithful men as he was. For as they have come in their places, so they persist in their practices, only with this difference, that in making havoc of the Church of God, they outdo all that ever made apostasy to that way and run at that rate in endeavoring the ruin of the work of reformation. as if they were afraid to be outrun by any who should come after them, or have it said that there had ever been men who with more malice did persecute and stretch forth their hands, not against certain of the disciples, but against the whole church of God. Reader, pardon, I pray thee, that I now and then digress in a parenthesis while these wise men come in my way, for thou knowest very well, according to the proverb, that the devil should have his due, and I desire to do them justice, and here I close it. If they should take it ill, I say, to have so much said to the advantage of this worthy man, if it will be acceptable to them to hear it, I have a mind to gratify them so far as to say that Mr. Rutherford was not alone in this, as his practice in that opposition was not peculiar to himself, for he but walked in the way of them who left him an example to continue with Christ in his temptations. So his privileges were not so peculiar to himself that he had none to share with him. And therefore I say, if they can reap any satisfaction by having it said, or if they have a mind still to quarrel, see if there be any of them in case to convince me of a falsehood, that God made it known, not only to themselves, but to the world, how highly he esteemed the fidelity of others also before him, who were his constant witnesses against introducing and establishing of prelacy in Scotland. He not only made themselves find what favorites they were by putting them, if I may say so, upon his secrets. For Mr. Davidson, Mr. Welsh, Mr. Bruce, and many others of the valiant soldiers of Christ and worthy witnesses in their time were known to have been prophets, which I could evince by many particular passages, but they deserve a more honorable mention, and it may be some will undertake it, than to be shut up within the limits of a parenthesis, particularly renowned Mr. Welsh, who at home and abroad in France was taken notice of as an extraordinary man, as a servant, from whom his master did not conceal what he was about to do. Not one word hath fallen to the ground of all that which by that seer was foretold concerning the troubles of Scotland. Hath not the sword of strangers, according to his prediction, been made drunk with the blood of the slain? Is not Christ crucified this day in Scotland, which he foresaw would follow? Yea, and buried too. And for fear that he should rise again, there is by the procurement of the chief priests a watch set. The great stone rolled to the mouth of the sepulchre is sealed, and all made as sure as they can. Because if he rise upon them again, this last error will prove worse than the first by far. The Lord, I say, hath fulfilled in every circumstance the word of his servant hitherto. Only the last part of it is not yet accomplished, wherein he foretelleth of the glorious resurrection of Christ crucified and buried in Scotland. But the exact accomplishment of the former puts us in expectation of the latter, notwithstanding that the great stone of the act recessory and many subsequent acts suitable to that sad one is rolled to the mouth of the sepulchre, and notwithstanding that the priests, the prelates, I should say, have by their importunity procured an order from the magistrate to make it as sure as they can, and being now clothed with the formality of that law whereby he was crucified, for alas, we have a law now by which law he must die. They are most diligent in setting their watches and making all fast. This is the thing I say that his sad-hearted disciples are in expectation of, notwithstanding of all the endeavors of his enemies to the contrary, and then prelacy in Scotland will breathe out its life and last together. For between Christ's rising and reigning and their falling, there hath ever been seen amongst us a certain connection. And truly, for as great an enemy as they may think me, I would make a very friendly overture unto them. I grant I come to counsel uncalled, and I hope also that my soul shall never enter into their secrets. And this is the advice I have to give them, that they would even look so far before their nose as to make their testament, so long as they are in case to go to Kirk and market. But I fear I lose my labor, for ere ever Judas will part with his pieces, he is the next door to hang himself, and who can help it? God not only dealt with them, I say, so as to put them upon his secrets, but he made their very enemies take notice of them oftentimes as men that had been with Jesus. Hath it not been a heart-staying and hand-strengthening remark amongst the servants and people of God in our native land, especially in a declining time, that God did singularly shine from heaven upon and show his satisfaction in the way and towards the persons of those of his servants who stood firm in their opposition to prelacy, and that he did as signally, one way or other, either sooner or later, give significations of his dislike of the way and the persons of them who turned aside to these crooked courses? And was it ever more visible as to the latter part than at this day? It may be that they will think it sufficient to convince me of a lie, that their greatness and grandeur is such, as if they had monopolized to themselves all the riches and honor of the nation. But if they will have patience to hear me to amen, I may possibly convince them of a truth that they are not willing to hear. For I only grant that they have forgotten their master's directions, inhibiting them to lift up themselves above their brethren. But I will grant them this also, for they must have much given them, that they have carried away the primacy and precedency from the nobility on whose necks they now trample. But when all this is granted them, yet they have not convinced me of telling an untruth, they must have leave to put out mine and other men's eyes besides, which we are not willing to give them. Though if any man would gratify his grace and their lordships, he must part with these in the first place, for an implicit faith is the basis and foundation of their kingdom of darkness, without which it would fall about their ears and but overwhelm them in the rubbish, and that would be very sad to them, for I suspect they have no great mind to die before this comes so much as under debate almost with indifferent men. Whether God be angry at their way, his very giving of them up to persecute his people and servants says nothing, if it say not this, that whatever be their outward prosperity, he hath classed them with Pharaoh in pouring out his plagues upon their heart. Is not this seen, that so soon as a man becomes serious in seeking of God, he becomes the butt of their malice, and the mark against against which they bend their bow and shoot the arrows of their indignation. And so soon as any begins to mind seriously the concernments of his soul, then fine, mani, tori, he falls in a dislike with them and their way. I do not say that all who hate the prelates are saints, for there is sufficient in their way to make them odious to others. But is not this known, that these who once begin to set their face towards God turn their back upon them? I am sure this observation doth seldom fail, or can be proved false in our native land. And then on the other hand, since these men were exalted, do not the wicked walk on every side? Is there not a profane spirit, the constant attendant of episcopacy in Scotland, broken loose in the land? Is there not such a flood of impiety running through the land that carries most men down the current as hath hardly been seen? Hath not this leprosy spread itself over the whole land, so that we are an abomination and talk to all about us? And if any would endeavor to accomplish a diligent search to find out the fountain that casts forth this mire and dirt to the defiling of the land and defacing of congregations, he would, it may be, find it where it ought least to be expected. These streams of impiety and impurity run from the sanctuary. Hence is it that profanity goes forth through the whole land, and can it be otherwise when so many faithful ministers are driven away and men put in their places to handle the law, of most of whom, without breach of charity, it may be said that they know not God and care not for the souls of his people? It is under the shadow of this plant, which, because it is not of our heavenly Father's planting, we live under the expectation, and though our eyes should be shut before we see it, we hope to die in the faith of its being plucked up, that these weeds have grown up. So that, alas, the vineyard of the Lord of hosts is now no more like his enclosure. It bringeth forth briars and thorns instead of good fruit. He planted the Church of Scotland, a noble vine, wholly a right seed. But since it became a seminary for prelates, the conversation of the generality proclaims this, that we are turned into the degenerate plant of a strange vine unto him. This is the prelatical reformation, which is suitable to itself all along, for having purged out of the church the faithful ministers of Christ, and the few who are yet remaining, being in expectation of the same lot, what can follow among the people but that the land should be drowned with a deluge of profanity? Are we not for the most part? Oh, if with a suitable measure of sorrow I could make mention of it, as the children of the Ethiopians to him, are not our spots unlike the spots of his people? This observation, I say, as it was a very heart-straying consideration in former times, and was instead of many arguments amongst them who were no great disputants. So I hope, since it was never more evident, it will still prove a heart-establishing consideration in the faith once delivered to the saints. Reader, how desirous soever thou mayest be to have dead Mr. Rutherford live in the hearts of the present and succeeding generations, by an account of his singular gracious life and answerably glorious death, yet I shall not, for that would lead me a length beyond the just limits of an epistle, where, contrary to my purpose, I find myself almost arrived already, be able to satisfy thy desire, nor answer thy expectation. It is not my present work to tell thee that he was a gentleman by extraction, that he was educated at schools and colleges, where he was admired for the pregnancy of his parts, and deservedly looked upon even then as a person of whom great things might be expected. Of his being pitched upon for a profession of philosophy by the College of Edinburgh, where he was educated when he was very young. Of his being called thence to the ministry in Anwath, to which charge he entered by the means of that worthy nobleman, my Lord Kenmure, without giving any engagement to the bishop, where he labored night and day with great success, the whole country being to him and accounting themselves as his particular flock. There it was where he wrote that great masterpiece of learning against the Arminians, which yet was but a compend of what he then intended, his Exercitationes Apologetica, of his persecution by the prelates, who were so sound in the faith as to challenge and accuse him for writing that book. Being called before their High Commission Court, he appeared and declined it, as none of the courts of Christ, nor was there need of anything else for a confirmation, that it came not from on high, but from below, save its procedure. For its acts had the very dye and visage of hell upon them. If they will plead that it is from above, they will be puzzled to pitch upon a period, or fix upon any other time, when it came down, except with the fallen angels. But it may be this pleases such angels of the church, so they will be called, for they boast much of antiquity. And truly that which gives ground for this conjecture, that it came down from heaven in that company, is that it persecutes the saints and servants of the Most High. And if there were none such upon earth, it would have no work, and was by this High Commission put from his ministry and sent to Aberdeen, where the doctors found to their confusion that the Puritans were clergymen as well as they, on his returning to his former charge upon that happy change of affairs in the year 1638, and his being shortly after sent to the profession of theology in the University of St. Andrews by the General Assembly, where he was also called to be worthy Mr. Blair's colleague in the ministry, which being the seat of the arch-prelate, was the very nursery of all superstition and worship, and error in doctrine, and the sink of all profanity in conversation among the students, where God did so singularly second his servants in indefatigable pains, both in teaching in the schools and preaching in the congregation, that it became forthwith a Lebanon, out of which were taken cedars for building the house of the Lord through the whole land, not a few of whom are this day amongst those who have obtained mercy of the Lord to be his faithful witnesses against Scotland's present shameful and unparalleled defection. Of his being sent with other worthy ministers by the General Assembly to the famous Synod at London, where during the time of his abode he published several pieces. In a word, of his unparalleled painfulness and holy zeal in being about his master's business, so that he seemed to pray constantly, to preach constantly, to catechize constantly, to be still in visiting the sick, in exhorting from house to house, to teach as much in the schools and spend as much time with the young men as if he had been sequestrate from all the world besides, and withal to write as much as if he had been constantly shut up in his closet. Sufficient a proof whereof hath been given to the world by the many pieces he hath published, but the great bulk of manuscripts which he hath left behind him and must lie buried with himself will put this further out of doubt, so that one Mr. Rutherford seemed to be many able godly men in one, or one who was furnished with the grace and abilities of many. It is not, I say, my present purpose to give any particular account to the world of these, or of the many things he had to wrestle with, especially towards the end of his days and of his edifying death. That may be done hereafter by a more dexterous hand and skillful pen, with much advantage and edification to the Church of God. Only I may say, if among the heathens Hercules was looked upon as so far both above the applause of any who undertook to commend him, and beyond the reach of obloquy and reproach of any who had fallen out with his wits, as to derogate from his worth, that it was a problem amongst them whether he who undertook to praise him, or he who vented anything to his prejudice, did commit the greatest solecism, though it was a Belluina Gloria, whereof he could boast, I suppose, with more reason among them who knew better, to make the true parallel betwixt things that differ, and are more fit to judge of that which is of true worth and great price in the sight of God. I should seem more ridiculous to say much to the advantage of the author, whose praise, without the help of my blunt pen, is in all the churches of Christ, whose manner of life, in all godliness and holy conversation, rendered him dear to the lovers of holiness, and who hath left his name for a blessing to the chosen of God. He was a true John the Baptist indeed, totus vox, a voice in habit, gesture, and conversation. In a word, in his life and at his death, he obtained that mercy of the Lord, even when he said nothing, to preach to all who beheld his conversation, which was observed to be in heaven while he conversed among men, that there was nothing good but to draw near to God. And now being got up above amongst those pages of honor who wait upon the king's own person, and having taken up his place amongst the spirits of just men made perfect, after which this saint often panted, and for which he prayed night and day, he doth by these epistles which he hath left behind him, wherein thou wilt perceive how his soul was drawn forth in incessant longings after that whereof he is now possessed, cry aloud to you, his companions, the saints that are in the world, to come up hither and see that which cannot be seen while ye are there, that which is only worth the seeing, that which, if it were known, would make you quarrel with death for delaying to shut your eyes upon other objects. Leave the dark world, doth he say, and come up hither to this blessed land of light, where all our childish thoughts of God are gone and evanished in this noonday vision, where the understanding is fully illuminate, and there is no cloud to benight or eclipse the soul in its uptakings of God, where the will hath a thorough compliance with and a perfect complacency in the will of God, where the affections do eternally run in a straight line towards him, and are forever put beyond hazard of diverting towards any other thing, or of being enamored with any other object. Though I have no purpose to insist on the particulars of his life or death, I say yet before I close this section, there are two things which I cannot, I ought not, for all the haste to conceal or let pass without a remark, because one was looked upon by many as a thing very observable, and the other will, I know, be taken notice of and welcomed by all the people of God. The first relates to the time when this faithful laborer was removed to his rest, which was the night following that dark and dismal day wherein the actor Sisera was passed, the Lord thereby showing a special piece of indulgence to his servant in not adding grief to his sorrow, but hiding it from these eyes which had accustomed themselves to trickle down without intermission, both for what he saw and what he foresaw. Since the Parliament of Scotland, so solemnly engaged to God, would at once burst all these bonds and cast away these cords from them, which were neither our bondage nor our burden, but the badge of that glorious liberty whereinto, with a strong hand, he had vindicate us. And upon the matter, they would needs say to the God, whose sworn subjects and servants they were, "Be gone from us." He would not let his faithful servant, whose zeal to the work of God was such that if the report of this shameful revolt had not killed him at the first hearing outright, yet it alone, without any other sickness, would have been more than enough to have brought down his head with sorrow to the grave, see another sun arise upon the land, out of which the Sun of Righteousness was banished by a law. And alas, who would desire to dwell where Christ may not reside with freedom, honor, and safety? Who that prefers Jerusalem to their chief joy would love to outlive the departing of the glory? Might not Jesus Christ have said to our Parliament, "For which of my good deeds is it that ye stone me?" Have I been a wilderness or land of drought unto you? Were ye not honorable and renowned among the churches abroad after ye became precious in my sight? Did I not make your adversaries sensible that he who touched you touched the apple of mine eye, so long as ye were steadfast in my covenant? And even after ye had left your first love and declined from the integrity of your espousals, I only visited this transgression with the rod and this iniquity with stripes. Nevertheless, my loving kindness did I not utterly take from you, nor suffered I my faithfulness to fail. Though I punished you as a nation, I dwelt amongst you as a church, and I did not remove your teachers into corners, but your eyes did see these, and ye did still hear the joyful sound. And as if all that had been too little, I gave you the desire of your heart, restored you to your civil liberties, which ye had sinned away, and set you down in a free parliament. And do ye thus requite me? What is this my entertainment, where I was once crowned and cried up for a king? What a strange and astonishing change is this, that the very persons who swore unto me the oath of allegiance and did sing in my company, spreading their garments in the way with shouting, are now crying, "Crucify him, crucify him." Shall I not have whereupon to lay my head, except it be on a cold stone in a prison amongst a people who after a most solemn manner had given themselves away unto me? Can these be the very men who with hands lifted up to heaven did so often and so solemnly swear before my Father and before his holy angels and in the sight of all the nations that they would be mine, and that I should have their lives and fortunes at my disposal. Is it possible that these are the men who carried, as they would have plucked out their very eyes and given them unto me, who now plait a crown of thorns and put it upon my head? Is this the nation and parliament who swore that they would serve the Lord their God, and that, according to the pattern, showed them in the mount, and bound their soul to his obedience by an oath, and as they should answer to him, or expect a comfortable appearance before the judge of quick and dead? Are they, might he say, the very same persons? Or is it another generation who have not heard of that solemn transaction betwixt me and the nation, who have used me worse than the very Gadarenes? Though these were void of religion, yet they had so much civility as to compliment me out of their coasts and pray me to be gone without committing any other act of hostility against me or beating me out of their borders with tuck of drum. But now shall it be, by a law, sedition, and treason to assert an obligation to me from all these oaths? Shall it be a note of incapacity for any place of trust in church or state to say that the land is under the oath of God, and that no power on earth can loose themselves or make void that obligation as to others? Nay, that the formal abjuring of these engagements to me shall be, if not the unum necessarium, yet the sine qua non to qualify a man for any public employment. Ah, Scotland, by dealing thus with thy covenanted God, what hast thou done? May not God, who was thy own God, expostulate with thee as he did with that people? Jeremiah 2, 10, 11, and 12. Go abroad amongst the nations, turn over all history, sacred and profane. Call for the records of the nations, and see if in these thou canst find any who have dealt with their gods as thou hast done. A precedent thou mayest possibly find, but a parallel in every respect thou canst not. Thou art singular and by thyself in committing these two evils, but such two as are comprehensive of all others, such too as a third is not possible, departing from the living God, and digging to thyself broken cisterns that can hold no water. Thou wilt find what folly is in this. I wish it be not too late to pain thyself in digging an empty cistern, and in forsaking the fountain of all consolation, and that a broken one too. As it hath nothing in it, so it can hold nothing if it had it. Is not this to commit to such evils as make a soul or nation truly miserable? And yet this hast thou done. Oh, may not the heavens be astonished and horribly afraid at this requital we have given unto Jesus Christ? Yea, we were so bent to backsliding, and so hasty and headstrong in departing from him, that we seem to have lost, together with our loyalty to the Son of God, all respect to our own reputation, as it often falls out that men lose the better part of their reason together with their religion. He who lets go the one does seldom retain the other. For by that very vote, never to be mentioned without the tears and detestation, whereby Christ was robbed of his prerogative, they did, besides their design, divest themselves of their own privileges. And while they unking him whom God hath made king in Zion, or do that which he will account, so they they unparliament themselves, direm omen to them, and it may be a token for good to the nation, I nothing doubt, but some, the most sagacious amongst them, saw this, then, though the generality, without considering either the ditch they were digging for themselves by what they did, or the danger that would follow upon their falling into it, suffered themselves to be carried down with the current, and did run as they were driven, or they have had time enough since to think in what capacity they could sit and act after that vote. For all laws being then repealed, which did exonerate the prelates and incapacitate them for sitting as one of the estates in Parliament, and these laws then only being in force, which made them an integral and essential part of the High Court of Parliament, the third estate was wanting while they were away, without which the other two were not in capacity to act as a Parliament. And if so, they may at their own leisure consider whether the precious blood that they did shed after that vote before the close of that session may not be required at their hands, as they would do well to think what they would answer before men if the question were asked, Quo warranto did you shed this blood? It may be they would find themselves further to seek as to what to say for satisfying any they found these worthies in answering all the accusations of their accusers. But what shall I say? It were more fit to weep over this than to write it, and to cry unto him against whom this is done. Wilt thou refrain thyself for these things, O Lord? Wilt thou hold thy peace and afflict us very sore? Alas, we made such haste to pull down that beautiful house wherein we and our fathers had praised him, and to overturn the very foundations of the dwelling place of his name to the ground, that in our precipitation to raise it, we have buried ourselves under the rubbish. For they are blind who do not see the men who have done this snared in the work of their own hands. And this, till more come, should make the people of God sing a Haggaiyan Selah. Oh, if all who have had a hand in it would in time bethink themselves, sure in that reflection, if they were serious, they would smite on their thigh and say, Alas, what have we done? The second thing that I have to acquaint thee with, and wherein I know, if thou be one of them who take pleasure in the dust of Zion's demolished walls, thou wilt have a special complacency, is that as his servant did with much sorrow of soul foresee Scotland's shameful revolt, which is plain by the last letter in this book, so his lord and master put him so far on his secrets as to let him see a delivery to the church on the other side of it. Let us have but patience. There is a plaudito for the saints and a song of praise for the Most High after this storm is over and ended. Mourn we may and ought, but let us mourn in hope. For he is the Lord Jehovah, who will hasten it in his time, which as it cannot be antedated by us, so shall it not lie in the power of all that oppose themselves to postpone it. And to that purpose, besides what thou mayest see in the last letter of this book, I shall set down some of his own words without either comment, alteration, or addition.
This Reformation audio track is a production of Stillwater's Revival Books. SWRB makes thousands of classic Reformation resources available, free and for sale, in audio, video, and printed formats. It is likely that the sermon or book that you just listened to is also available on cassette or video, or as a printed book or booklet. our many free resources, as well as our complete mail order catalog, containing thousands of classic and contemporary Puritan and Reform books, tapes, and videos at great discounts, is on the web at www.swrb.com. We can also be reached by email at swrb@swrb.com, by phone at 780-450-3730, by fax at 780-468-1096, or by mail at 4710-37A Avenue, Edmonton, that's E-D-M-O-N-T-O-N, Alberta, abbreviated capital A, capital B, Canada, T6L3T5. You may also request a free printed catalog. And remember that John Calvin, in defending the Reformation's regulative principle of worship, or what is sometimes called the scriptural law of worship, commenting on the words of God, "which I commanded them not, neither came into my heart," from his commentary on Jeremiah 7:31, writes, "God here cuts off from men every occasion for making evasions, since he condemns by this one phrase, 'I have not commanded them,' whatever the Jews devised. There is then no other argument needed to condemn superstitions than that they are not commanded by God. For when men allow themselves to worship God according to their own fancies, and attend not to his commands, they pervert true religion. And if this principle was adopted by the papists, all those fictitious modes of worship in which they absurdly exercise themselves would fall to the ground. It is indeed a horrible thing for the papists to seek to discharge their duties towards God by performing their own superstitions. There is an immense number of them, as it is well known, and as it manifestly appears. Were they to admit this principle, that we cannot rightly worship God except by obeying his word, they would be delivered from their deep abyss of error. The prophet's words, then, are very important, when he says that God had commanded no such thing, and that it never came to his mind, as though he had said that men assume too much wisdom when they devise what he never required, nay, what he never knew."